Run from here, I guess, as well as from as well as Institute of Math Sciences. And we're going to talk about emergent fermionic strings in boson helium 3.
Helium 4. Thanks, Duncan. So I should thank Jifrey and Zhaogang, my colleagues, for inviting me to talk here. It's really a pleasure to meet many old colleagues and friends. So I'm going to talk about solid helium-4, which has been in the news for the last several years now because of some key experiments. So if I have given a wrong impression to string theory friends that I'm going to talk about fermionic strings, please forgive me. It's going to be about some chains of fermions that emerge in helium-4 solid, which is what I will talk about. So it's far from the standard string theory, but I'm happy if string theories have come here. So Yang Beck was telling about last century, the techniques and so on. This goes even earlier. When I was a graduate student at Bangalore Indian Institute of Science, I had the pleasure of listening to my professor Narendra Kumar, an outstanding professor and teacher. So he gave a journal club talk, followed by a couple of talks on a very beautiful paper by Tony Leggett on can a solid be a superfluid? So this was a paper that was written soon after the suggestion that came from Andreev, Lipschitz, and Chester that solid helium-4, because of the strong quantum fluctuations, can have unusual properties, including possibility of superfluidity at very low temperature. So Leggett suggested a way to measure it through what is called non-classical moment of inertia. That is, if you take solid helium-4, and if it indeed does have some superfluid component, you should be able to shake it and find out some small reduced moment of inertia corresponding to the amount that leaves behind your torsional oscillation. So that's how I learned about it, and Kumar gave many talks on that, and I've been thinking about it literally for decades. So very fascinating and a tough problem. Then my first meeting with Anderson in ICTP 1983, it was a very nice time. We had a very long chat. Most of the time we're discussing about supersolid helium-4, because it turns out Anderson has a critique about the possibility of supersolid helium-4 in his book, where he suggests that it is not possible. So I had some arguments with him and discussion. That was in 1983. Since then, we keep discussing about this. And the interest came after Moses Chan's experiment, which all of you know, in 2004, about some experimental observation of non-classical moment of inertia in solid helium-4 below about 0.2 Kelvin. So that's a history. So I will spend some time discussing about the phenomenology to convince you that solid helium-4 is indeed strange, then discuss the standard topic about zero-point fluctuations, Lindemann criteria, vacancies, topological defects, and their quantum delocalization, then how miserably harmonic lattice dynamics fails. And then I will try to argue that solid helium-4 is more than a supersolid. The way Andreev and Chester, Lipschitz thought about is a very simple possibility in which there are vacancies even in the ground state, and they delocalize and lead to supersolid behavior. And I will try to argue that there is something more going on there. There is some fermionization, this is a way to build a correlation hole in a Bose system. Then I will discuss a model Hamiltonian and make some prediction. So it's going to be a lot of phenomenology, and whatever mathematics I will do at the end is very simple and standard things that we know. Surprises in condensed matter physics arise from unexpected corners. For example, benzene was, Pauling developed this idea of simple resonance in benzene, and then he pushed it to graphite, a semi-metal. And that was a seed for resonating valence bond state theory for Anderson, who developed it in 1973. He said that several Mott insulators could be in, their spin state could be in resonating valence bond state, and then cuprate came and the whole thing began. So cuprate is a very bad metal. It doesn't look metallic. It doesn't have the luster of a standard metal, but still it manages to do wonderful things at low temperature, and it has put the seed for many of the new developments that we are hearing these days here. And heavy fermion, for example, a very sluggish electron system. Electrons become 500 times heavier than the standard electron, and they lead to wonderful physics, quantum lattice, and many, many still unexplored things. Now, today I will talk about helium-4. From the point of view of superfluid, it's very different from Bose-Einstein gas. So it's a very bad superfluid in the sense the condensate fraction is maybe 8%. 8% of the helium atoms, because of the strong repulsion among them, managed to become superfluid. So it's a, you can say it's a bad and strongly correlated superfluid. So it is in this background we will discuss. So solid helium-4 is strange. For example, if you look at the phase diagram, it's a classic phase diagram that you see this solid-liquid coexistence curve suddenly turning around and becoming essentially flat. And Clausius equation tells you that since it is horizontal, the entropy between solid and liquid is essentially the same, or they are vanishing. And then you see a small island of BCC phase and HCP phase. And helium refuses to become a solid unless you apply 25 bar of pressure. And then this is a gas, a liquid, and the triple point is somewhere here. Now, this is what I said, that there is some quantum rigidity which seems to be common between the solid and superfluid, so which I read about it some years ago. And also, the cousin of helium-4, helium-3, is also a very interesting solid. The fact that there is a mass difference and then there is a nuclear spin leads to quality change in the qualitative change in the phase diagram. You don't have superfluidity, but you go to very low temperature, millikelvin range, you get pairing of helium-3 atoms and superfluidity. But at high pressure and temperature, there is a lot of similarity between the two. But I believe there is some super character associated with the solid helium-4 also. There's a very nice review article by Sebastian Balibar in Reviews of Modern Physics, and I have taken many of the anomalous properties from there. The first thing is beautiful prediction by Andre van Lifshitz, who said that if quantum fluctuations are very important in solid helium-4, to the extent that any defects like vacancies or dislocations, they undergo quantum tunneling rather than standard incoherent motion. So they suggested that if you have an interface between superfluid helium and solid helium, there should be what is called crystallization waves. So what these experimentalists did was they took this solid helium and liquid helium and essentially tapped the container. And what they found was a wave that propagates on the surface. So it's a melting and crystallization happening at very short time scale in a coherent way. Some people call it as quantum coherent motion. So that's remarkable, because if you think about one of the known solid-liquid interface, namely ice and water, anything that happens at the surface is kinetic dominated, hydrogen bonds are broken, and they diffuse slowly and then come back and so on. Here everything happens coherently at very short time scale. So in fact, they worked out a dispersion for the surface wave, and then even could, from experiment, determine this dispersion and fit the parameters. So it's amazing thing that you have solid crystalline material and a superfluid helium-4, and waves can propagate. So the interface looks like a quantum fluid. And still, there is a lot of understanding that is necessary, because whatever exists are phenomenological theories. Now, there is another famous thing, that if you have a crystal and if you grow a crystal slowly, you will get what is called faceting formation, which reflects the underlying crystal structure. It's very difficult to do these kind of experiments with real crystals. Maybe sodium chloride and sugar crystals are easier, but with other crystals, it's very hard because of the kinetics. But in the case of helium-4, they can be apparently done very easily. You have a crystal and then coexisting the superfluid, reduce the temperature, you see facets developing, and at the end, you get beautiful facets. So there is a whole field of quantum roughening. Many people have worked on it, done theory and experiment, suggesting that a lot of quantum fluctuations are going on. This is another remarkable experiment. Now, if you take glass, and then contain has, you have a solid helium with the c-axis in the HCP crystallographic lattice oriented in this direction, then you have a superfluid. You gently turn the container, then very quickly, to satisfy gravity, the surface becomes flat. And then the c-axis in this direction. So this is unusual, you know, like you take with do this with ice, it doesn't happen. Whereas, so if you rotate the crystal together with the container, the crystal melts on one side and grows on the other side in a short time, several milliseconds. So this is one of the experiments. Then this is a famous experiment that you know, stirred the whole community by Moses Chan, who wanted to prove the suggestion of Leggett that if there is a superfluidity in a solid, there should be non-classical moment of inertia. So he built a torsion balance and then put helium-4. It's a very difficult experiment. And then did torsion experiments. He measured the periodicity as a function of temperature. There are several temperature variations. And then on top of that, you have a big jump below about 200 millikelvin or 0.2 Kelvin. So he identified this with onset of super solidity. It's a beautiful experiment that really kindled the imaginations of theorists and experimentalists. But now, after a lot of work, the conclusion of this, it has been questioned based on new experiments and theories. So a general consensus is that the observed super solid behavior arises from quantum dynamics of defects, dislocations, grain boundaries, quantum glassiness, and so on. So it's not as neat as what Andrei and Lipschitz suggested, or Chester suggested, but there seems to be something else going on. And I will try to argue an unexpected super character of solid helium. So it may have failed its test for super fluidity, but it has other things.
Sir, can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
About this roughening.
Yeah.
So is there a roughening transition line? If you go to the phase diagram.
Yeah, where is the roughening transition? It's a good question.
Is there a roughening transition? Where would it be? I
don't remember. I have seen it.
It's been determined.
It has been determined. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I should know. Thanks for the question. Yeah, is it above here or does it coincide with this? Yeah. Okay. Now, this is a very nice experiment. Which, in fact, the theorist focusing on super solidity of helium-4 focus mostly on Moses Chan's experiment. But as I said, there are many other things which needs to be explained. Perhaps their temperature dependence carries some signature of the super solid behavior. So that needs to be investigated. So here, the Geisler effect, what happened? They have a chamber where there is solid helium-4. Basically, they apply pressure. That's this apparatus. And there is a small hole here, which is exposed to vacuum. And if you apply pressure, through that, jets of helium comes out periodically. This is called a geyser effect. So there are only two papers and maybe one theory paper. What they claim is there are vacancies. This pressure basically forces the vacancy close to this orifice, and there is a pressure drop, and here there is a melting, and then that oozes out. That's the only explanation given by this group, but they have repeated the experiments and they have confirmed what is going on, but a good microscopic understanding of many of these things are still lacking. There is another experiment by this Amherst group. So what they do is they basically take solid helium-4 and then they force liquid helium into this. Of course, it's difficult to do it here because liquid and solid coexist here. So what they do is they take a Vicar glass, and inside the Vicar glass, liquid helium exists as liquid helium even at higher pressure. So the phase boundary shifts inside the Vicar glass because of randomness, and they are able to maintain liquid at a higher pressure here and then force it, and then they observe, and then there is a leakage. So this is the observation. Now, there are lots of, they claim that, and the onset is around 0.2 Kelvin, so it coincides with what Moses Chan observed. So they claim that there is indeed some superfluid component. But there are others who argue that what is going on is more to do with having in your crystal grain boundaries and some holes of liquids where superfluid can leak, or there can be crystallographic defects like dislocations where these cores can melt and there can be leakage through that. So whether a solid is able to transport helium-4 or vacancies across is being questioned, but it's very interesting that these experiments exist. Then there is a very recent work from Edmonton and a French group, John Beamish and Oliver, where they talk about Jane plasticity of a quantum crystal. Plasticity, you know, as you all know, related to some kind of irreversible, suppose you bend a harmonic solid, it will come back. But if you bend it too much, it may stay there. So it's beyond Hooke's law and elastic limits. Here what they find is this behaves like a, you can create plastic deformation, but which is reversible. And there is a temperature range in which what they call as Jane plasticity that happens. And then below that, helium-3 content seems to remove this effect. This is another mystery, that what Moses Chan observed was also strongly controlled by helium-3 atoms. So many of these things need to be explained. So resistance to shear nearly vanish in one direction because dislocation is light really parallel to the basal plane of the HCP structure. So this again emphasizes the importance of quantum motions of dislocations. And if you think about a simple square cubic lattice and have this edge dislocation, they can move, for example, climb up through creation of pairs of jocks, or they can glide through pairs of kings. And what Andreev and Lifshitz pointed out in their original work was that these objects, you can call them solitons, they have very low effective mass. The mass is as low as the mass of helium-4 atoms. So they indeed quantum delocalize. So this was an interesting thing. If you take a crystal like iron or sodium chloride, if you create defects like this, they won't move that easily. Maybe occasional thermal motions will be there. Here they undergo very coherent ballistic motion, and that apparently covers lots of physics here. Okay. Now, if you look at microscopically, as I said, the amount of condensate is about 8%, and the rest of it, if you do neutron scattering, is in finite momentum. And this is a very interesting neutron scattering experiment done in 2008. This was published in one of the Indian journals on some special occasion by, this is by Gooding. And so what is interesting is they found new structure in solid helium, very pure solid helium, at extremely low temperatures, beyond acoustic phonons and optical phonons, some structures like this. In fact, this is one of the things that motivated me to think along the line that I will discuss today. So, in fact, I should also point out, neutron scattering in solid helium-4 and liquid helium-4 is extremely anomalous. If you look at look for sharp lines, you never get them. You often get very asymmetric broad lines, and then theories of explaining them based on microscopic theories are very, very hard. So that's a whole field, self-consistent harmonic approximation and going beyond that. In fact, according to some people like Verdamer, that neutron scattering beyond some energy scale, there is no difference between liquid helium-4 and solid helium-4. At a very small energy scale, they start looking alike. So there is something very fluidic about solid helium-4. So this is the point, that a normal solid, an Einstein solid, for example, is a periodic lattice of atoms trapped inside in itself self-consistently, and then they undergo harmonic or unharmonic motions, and then you have integer atom per unit cell. And if there are thermal vacancies, they diffuse very slowly compared to atomic vibration period. And this breaks down in helium-4. So in a super solid, for example, there are vacancies, according to Andreev and Chester, that present in the ground state. So the number of atoms per unit cell is less than 1. And they undergo quantum delocalization. And the delocalization timescale is comparable to atomic vibration timescale. So this makes it a very hard problem from lattice dynamics point of view. So this is what made Andreev, Lifshitz, and Chester in 1969 to suggest that this will be a super solid, and all this quantum behavior will be there of vacancies, defects, dislocations, etc. Of course, there are beautiful theories. After Andreev and Lipschitz Chester's work. There are lots of work on variational wave function. And then there was very important work from Michael Fisher, lattice quantum spin system analogy, where you can imagine coexistence of XY planar order and antiferromagnetic order as some kind of supersolid behavior. You can make things quantitative using that analogy. Then Anderson had a critique in his book on notions and basic notions in condensed matter physics, where he used Hartree-Fock kind of arguments for both solid and argued that there is some self-consistency which prevents from supersolid emerging. Then after this Moses Chan Kim's experiment, there are very interesting developments, lattice model, Bose-Cabot model, incommensurate magnetic order and connection to supersolidity and so on. And then I did some work on spontaneous vortex solid. Anderson has a vortex liquid picture, which explains many of the phenomenology. And then more importantly, there is extensive numerical studies, very, very expensive and very, very hard work by Shepperly and then Prokofiev Troyer, among many others. And what they conclude is that with their best ability, they are not able to see zero-point vacancies present in the ground state. There are no permutation cycles, long permutation cycles, characteristic of superfluidity. However, dislocation cores are behaving strangely, and I will discuss that. They behave as Luttinger liquid. All this phenomenology, what it tells is one needs quantum mechanics with indistinguishable, intrinsically delocalized atoms to explain the behavior of solid helium-4. That is, we are used to thinking in terms of Einstein solid, where you have a home site and all atoms are localized. Now, many things indicate, like all the experiments have pointed out, that it's better to think about solid helium-4 as some quantum fluid, which exhibits a spontaneous atom density wave. This is not a new idea. Several people have in the past suggested this and have done phenomenological work. And also the variational wave functions I discussed has that in it. So I'm going to push this further and then find something interesting. So this is what, that is, if you take this phase diagram and then walk up along the pressure axis, you have a gas at extremely low below this line. Gas, liquid gas coexistence line, and then you have a dense superfluid, and then at very high temperature, 1,000 bars and so on, you go into some classical solid. In fact, slightly higher temperature, you go into FCC crystal. So in between, there is supposed to be an atom density wave containing fermionic strings, not strongs, sorry. There are many other experimental, this is something I forgot. The problem is very hard because of the following experimental fact, that if you measure kinetic energy of helium atoms and potential energy, they are comparable. And this is one of the, whereas if you take a solid like argon or neon, the kinetic energy will be extremely small and its potential energy dominated, and you can do physics with the standard harmonic and non-harmonic. Here, things delocalize more than expected. Just to point out some number, if you are at 1 Kelvin, the de Broglie wavelength of a helium-4 atom is about 10 angstrom unit. So if you try to localize, that means you are really squeezing the wave packet, wave function of this, so which requires energy. So this entire game of solidification or crystallization is a fight between potential energy gain and kinetic energy loss coming from localization. And it's a strong coupling, hard problem. Now, there's a very nice work, again, unfamiliar to condensed matter community, from Frank Stillinger from Princeton, where he analyzes several aspects of helium-4. For example, he takes the best two-body potential available and then puts helium atoms in HCP configuration and measures the potential energy as a function of lattice parameter. What you find is the minimum is around 2.56 angstrom unit. Whereas even under pressure at 25 atmosphere, when you crystallize helium-4, the lattice parameter is about 3.6 angstrom unit, somewhere here. So that means if you think in terms of classical potential, the helium atom, if you consider classical potential is energy alone, it is sitting in some unstable point. So which, for example, if you take a linear chain of them and then sum of the potential energy, if this is the equilibrium position, in fact, you are sitting at a maximum. So things will try to slide down this way or that way, indicating that HCP structure is an unstable structure. So what Stirlinger does is he starts with a equilibrium configuration and then allows the system to evolve, goes by the steepest descendant, tries to reach the minimum, which will correspond to this state. But on the way, it visits what he calls as inherent and reasonably stable structure, which looks amorphous-like, but they undergo harmonic motions. So what he has done in his theory is to build a quantum mechanical theory centered around this unstable structure, and there are several local minima in the neighborhood. The average structure looks like HCP, but there are very strong deviation from the HCP crystal, which indicates possibility of large distance motions of helium atoms rather than harmonic. So I will not go into the details, but it's very interesting to see that if you do harmonic analysis sitting at the equilibrium point, you find that every phonon frequency is imaginary. In other words, omega square is negative. So for example, he applies pressure and then comes down slowly, you find some of the modes going up become positive. Beyond about 1,000 bar, everything becomes positive. So we are having a very unusual situation in which you have some mean configuration, which is HCP crystalline-like, but most of the dominant configurations are strong deformations from it. So there is no simple way to do lattice dynamics. So there has to be some kind of wave function analysis or some other insight that needs to go in. This also I wanted to point out. What these colleagues do is they do extensive quantum Monte Carlo related work where they start with a screw dislocation. This is an edge dislocation. And what they find is because of the incommensurate character along the screw, things start delocalizing and you have essentially Lettinger liquid-like behavior along this chain. It's beautiful work. In fact, this also gave me some impetus to proceed along the line I will talk about. So I will come back to this later. Duncan, I believe I have about 10 minutes. Okay. Please continue. I will continue. Okay. So how to build an atom density wave for a strongly interacting Bose liquid? In fact, it's very easy, as recognized by Macmillan, Riotto, Chester, Feynman, that is helium 4, since it's a boson, the ground state is believed to be nodeless. So you basically input the fact that two helium atoms cannot come too close. So you can implement it through what is called Feynman-Jastrow factor, saying that this U of R becomes very large below some radius, some B, and then otherwise it becomes zero at long distances. And then to satisfy the fact that you have low energy linear Goldstone modes, you have to put some extra two-body correlations like this, which is taken from phonon, dispersion, and so on. That gives some long tail for this. So, but if you look at it, if you take the modulus square of this, you'll start viewing it as they did, as a Boltzmann factor of two-dimensional classical liquid. So you have atoms interacting through this two-body potential, which is attractive in some region and repulsive elsewhere, short distances. And we very well know from our knowledge of classical statistical mechanics, even though we cannot solve it exactly, that this Boltzmann factor can describe a gaseous state, a liquid state, and also a solid state. So it is this which motivated Chester to argue that this ground state wave function looks like a finite temperature thermal system. And we know at finite temperature, due to entropy gain, there should be vacancies and interstitials. And in real solid, these vacancies and interstitials will be drifting incoherently, classical motion. Here, describes nodeless wave function. So somehow these vacancies, and so if you think in terms of some quantum dynamics, they should move without change in phase of the wave function. So they should delocalize, and they should exhibit what is called off-diagonal long-range order. So that's what Riotto, Chester, and others proved for this wave function. But the point is that this wave function, which is limited by its very form, exaggerates supersolid tendency. So this is one of the problems. So people, that's why they wanted to go into quantum Monte Carlo and other numerical methods. However, it's a beautiful wave function which discusses, it has a lot of physics in it. Okay. Now, the question is, this is what prompted me to think about, partly, that if you look at neutron scattering, in addition to the acoustic wave, you find at 1 milli electron volt some branch suggesting that there can be some kind of particle hole continuum with some kind of square root energy singularity. This is an experimental fact. The authors try to explain it in terms of vacancy waves. It's not very convincing to me, and not many people have worked on it. So this is a very important experimental fact, which we will discuss. Okay, this is an ansatz. Building correlation hole is easy and possible, at least within our knowledge. Maybe helium-4 follows it through fermionization and use of Fermi hole. This is very well known in one-dimensional, for example. If you take one-dimensional hardcore bosons on a lattice or on a continuum, you can essentially do Jordan-Wigner transformation, which attaches Z2 strings to the bosons and make them fermions. And then what you get is basically a slated determinant, and its modulus is taken, so it becomes a nodeless wave function, or wave function everywhere it's positive. I have to put a mod here. So it's a very simple Jastrow type of function. And in fact, in another context, when you look at Heisenberg chain with long-range interaction, the Haldane-Sastry model, you get a very similar thing with square here. And then if you go to Kolodziejow-Sutherland model, you get some lambda. So in this one-dimensional system, it's very easy for the system to change its statistics and take advantage of Fermi hole and then develop fermionic type of excitation. That is, here Jastrow form implies emergence of deconfined fermions, in this case anions and fractional charge, fractional exclusion charge excitations. So in one dimension, nature does take advantage of fermions in a very beautiful way. It's not that I just take modulus of the wave function. The analytic form of this wave function also implies some form of the excitation, namely particle pair, hole pair excitations and fermionic excitations. What about two dimension? Two dimension, it can be done. In fact, in a very nice paper in the context of anion superconductivity, Laughlin tried to describe strongly interacting bosons in two dimension, starting from a Fermi C, which you can view it as flux tube attachment and so on. And the interesting thing is, the wave function will look like modulus of a simple Fermi C, and then it has started to change crystalline order arising from Fermi surface physics. Now, there are formalization in terms of Chern-Simons theory and so on. So that means there are not many different ways in which nature can find its wave function to minimize energy and take advantage, create correlation hole. So at least fermions and bosons seem to be a very possible thing. And also, as you know, that if you take two-dimensional quantum Hall physics, you can write down Laughlin-like wave function with a modulus to make it Bose-like. And it's known that when n exceeds about 8, 9, then this starts describing a triangular Wigner crystallized state. So this is a genuine quantum fluid in which things quantum fluctuate. They are not localized into home sites. but however, they describe, in that sense, a density wave. So this is known in two dimension. So what I'm going to discuss next is, what about three dimension? Now, by taking clue from what we learned in the previous discussion, you can take fermionic slated determinant of a charge density state, starting from an auxiliary filled band problem containing charge density gap, and think about it as a variational wave function. I have not done the analysis, it's somewhat hard, but I will not discuss, you can justify this kind of approach by a slave boson approach, RBB type of infield theory. I will not discuss. Now, what seems to be going on in my view in helium-4 is nature is taking advantage of this fermionization either in one direction or in two direction. So this seems a little more physical than this suggestion. So let me focus on that. And the this is the logic, HCP structure, C-axis somewhat special. Further in the experiments, what you find is C-axis zero-point fluctuation is about 20% or even more larger than AB-plane quantum fluctuation, as you measure from Debye-Waller factor in neutron scattering and other X-ray scattering. So I do a thought experiment. Start with a classical hexagonally closed-packed crystal with infinitely massive atoms. Then slowly make the atomic mass finite. Then zero-point fluctuations will start setting in. And you can make the mass anisotropic, because I'm doing thought experiment, I can think wildly, not very wild, but just anisotropic mass, adjust parameters and make the solid quantum melt along the C-axis. So in other words, what I am suggesting is, what you have is a chain of quantum melted atoms. And of course, the atoms don't tunnel from here to here. That's prohibited. I will tell the reason behind it. So they can undergo lateral oscillations, but there is no mass transfer. So they look like Einstein atoms in this direction, but they are quantum melted or delocalized in this direction. In other words, if you look at it along the c-axis, you have a hexagonal lattice of these tubes coming out of the blackboard. And so it's a 2D hexagonal array of one-dimensional liquid. That is a very simple answer. Then study the consequence. The consequence is very dramatic. Once I have constrained motion, like harmonic motion along the AB plane and free motion along the C axis, because of whatever potential I have, strong repulsive potential, immediately my helium-4 atoms become fermion. This is the fermion extreme. It's a very simple consequence. But then the next step is even more interesting. One-dimensional fermion, according to Piles, has a very strong instability to undergo density wave order at twice the wave vector. Now, I can arrange my densities properly. And what you get is, so you have a one-dimensional fermionic chain. And it undergoes density wave modulation with a period which is twice the lattice parameter. And then, because there is repulsion between atoms, they will be staggered. So it's a very simple possibility. I will justify it with some model. So what you get is, if you look at the cross-section, you have a triangular lattice of where there is higher density of atom and less density. If you go to the next layer, it'll be the other way. So it's like AB, AB stacking, the standard stacking of triangular lattices. So in a very nice way, you started with HCP crystal, allowed for quantum melting along the C-axis. And then quantum melting reinforces atom density wave, and you go back to your HCP lattice, which is very nice. So there is some kind of self-consistency. So stabilized original HCP structure. So I have achieved, by this procedure, a quantum liquid state, which supports atomic density wave along one direction. Now, it's all these are all words. How do I formalize it? At the moment, I have no very hard calculation, but I have formalization through some very simple lattice spin model, which all of you understand it. Very straightforward. So what I do is I start with AAA stacked hexagonal lattice of half-filled hardcore bosons. They have short-range repulsion. And this captures some low-energy physics. And I can develop some approximate methods and also make some prediction. That's why I'm doing this very simple-minded thing. And here, I will come back to this. So the model is extremely simple. To represent quantum delocalization along the chain, I have a hardcore boson hopping along the chain. So it's a XY model with spin hop XY model. Then to represent repulsion between electron fermions or the bosons between the neighboring chain, I have an antiferromagnetic repulsion. So M represents the 2D hexagonal lattice vector chain index. And then delta is the nearest neighbor vector. And then you have the lattice side. So it's straightforward. There is no quantum communication between neighboring chains because there is no spin flip term. Basically, there is a repulsion through this spin density. So you can do Jordan-Winkler transformation. It becomes a very beautiful one-dimensional chain of Jordan-Winkler fermions, which ripple among themselves. And you can do a mean field theory. It's very difficult to solve this exactly, but mean field theory works remarkably well. You can do Hartree-Fock and so on and do it. So this very simple model, already in late states of physics, I'm trying to bring out that, in fact, I have tried to fit numbers is J perpendicular and J from neutron scattering data, and I get very reasonable numbers for this model. What are the predictions of this simple model? Already that's very interesting. So Piles instability arising from interchain interaction. You have staggered, okay, this already I have explained. Then the interesting predictions are particle hole excitations above the Piles gap. Because once I have a liquid-like behavior along the chain, I should be able to excite particle hole pair across the Pyles gap, and I connect it with the gap seen in neutron scattering. Then we also know from Pyles instability that there are two ground states, A and B, and you can create domain walls. So they are confined domain wall excitations because of the neighbor staggered arrangement. So you have actually half charge excitations, which are confined. Then this is very important because there is a self-consistency. Once my bosons acquire Z2 string and become fermions, it's difficult for a single particle to tunnel from one chain to another chain. So there is confinement, or there is suppressed single particle tunneling between chains at low energies. Now there can be residual interaction possibility of pair tunneling. So this simple model already suggests how to go beyond what I started with. So before I conclude, I will just discuss about going beyond the chain icing model. Now, the model that I have discussed, by its very nature, after the Pyles gap, doesn't have Goldstone move because it's a discrete symmetry that's broken. So it has a gap. But we know in solids, there are Goldstone modes. So to that extent, it explains some high energy physics above a couple of milli electron volt. So how to get back acoustic phonons and how to create dislocations and so on, these are all problems which can, part of it can be analyzed by modifying, going beyond X, Y, X, X, Z chain, for example, and then adding some X, Y interaction in the transverse direction. Then you have to do approximation. Now what I have done is, once it becomes a spin model, you have this old weapon of slave boson type of analysis. You can do many things. And this, of course, has a model as a U1, Z2 symmetry, the kind of thing that Sintil was mentioning. Now, the interesting question. Once you put it in the language of spins, now things become familiar to us. Are there hidden topological or quantum order in these helium-4 crystals because there is fermionization going on? So I think they are all very, very fascinating questions. Another scenario which I have not had time to explain is doing this along the plane. That is, you can imagine the planes which are weakly coupled. I have no particular choice. This is easy to do, so I'm doing it. This is also possible to do. Now let me conclude, because the chairman is up. So my main message is that emergence of fermionic correlations in strongly interacting 3D bosonic matter. I think if that much comes out through future theoretical and experimental investigation, I'll be very delighted. Because so far, people have been focusing on the bosonic character, vacancies, and their super. Nobody has talked about fermionic type of aspect in the context of helium-4 solid. So in more refined theory, I can imagine these fermionic chains undergoing large deformations, breaking and fusing, and leading rich dynamical behavior, a liquid of fermionic strings. So solid helium continues to be super and richer than what we thought. So maybe there is room and learn from string theory insights, cohomology, and category theory. Thank you.
Does the structure factor for neutron scattering show a lot of anisotropy, that it's confined, a lot of it is stronger in the plane normal to the...
Exactly, yes. Yeah. In fact, the neutron scattering literature is very rich. There are lots of analysis of the old structure factors at higher energy alone. It does reflect the HCP character. One of the things inferred from the structure factor is the amount of zero-point oscillation, which is anisotropic.
Yeah. Approximately how much is anisotropic? I mean, if it was purely liquid along those lines, it would just be a single plane.
Correct. So now they recrystallize through Pyles instability.
Yeah.
So to that extent, you don't see large anisotropy. So it's also very important to find out the density wave profile. How is this density wave order parameter varying? There is also not much information. Maybe one has to go back to old neutron scattering data and infer that.
I guess if it was only very weakly localized, then this deconfinement into pairs of charge of off bosons would be quite long.
Yes.
But any idea how much they could fluctuate apart, have the virtual fluctuations that...
So few lattice parameters, because the the scales are like this. The phonon bandwidth is about 10 to 15 Kelvin.
Yeah.
And this gap is about 1 Kelvin. So it's a very small amount. So to that extent, I think they can strongly
quite a low string tension.
Exactly, yeah.
There's these sort of superfluid channels, is what you're kind of getting at, right? And is that, how does that, is there some kind of percolation going on when you apply, you know, these experiments where you're applying pressure on one end and then there were these?
So that's the question. So experimentalists also have, because they have no way of measuring what's going on inside in detail, whether there's a percolating channel or percolating dislocation network. So they are all hypothesized, and there is no conclusive.
So is there any parameter that they can change sort of how strong the smirting effect is, or is it be like discontinuous?
So one thing they can change is helium-3 concentration, reasonably accurately. They can put it as an impurity, and that shows dramatic effects beyond some concentration. So it is often related to pinning of this delocalization by helium-3 impurity.
Okay.
In fact, in terms of these piles also, if I put a helium-3 atom, what happens is basically breaks the one-dimensional chain. There is no coherent communication. So some of these things can be phenomenologically explained. But there is no systematic experiment. In fact, the number of people doing actively helium-4 because of the experimental difficulty is about a dozen in the whole world. And so I think it would be very nice to...
But you would expect some kind of percolation behavior if this is...
Correct. In fact, that's the Prokofiev and many others. What they say is that even what Moses Chan observed is coming from a percolating network of these dislocation lines or these grain boundaries. There are some systematic studies. I should not say, there was a colloquium by David from last year from Cornell. He connected it to some rheology experimental and some quantification of those things.